My name is Bob Darrow. I'm an alcoholic. Bottom of page 62 kind of sums up the whole deal and what we have to do. This is the how and the why of it. First of all, we had to quit playing God. It didn't work. I could have never imagined that I was playing God. I didn't think I was. I would go to my sponsor in early sobriety with lists of people that were out of line, you know, the people I work with that are stealing, or they're coming in late, or they're not pulling their weight, and people in AA that were out of line, you know, that aren't putting money in the basket, or they're lying in meetings, or they're full of crap, or they're just looking to get laid. They're not really there to be serious. And he'd always say the same thing to me. He says, "You got to quit playing God." And I'd say, "I'm not playing God. I'm reporting accurate information here. I'm not playing God." And I couldn't get it that I was playing God. I had climbed up on the throne of judgment, and I was playing God in a state of separation between me and you. And it says it didn't work. And that's the problem. I think I have done that all my life because I have this illusion that it'll work. If you're like me and secretly you got the egomaniac with the inferiority complex going on inside you, that you really feel less than and awful and inadequate and full of fear. And yet you have this tremendous ego that rises up to compensate for the inferiority and the fear. It's like being with this weird teeter-totter thing. And the reason that the judgment doesn't work is that I'm under the illusion that if I can pull all of you down, that maybe that is my vehicle for rising up, for feeling better about myself. Almost as if I can feel superior to you, maybe I won't feel so bad about myself when it's just me. But the problem is it never works. It doesn't, you can't level the playing field by judgment. All it does is you still feel like crap secretly when you're by yourself. And now you're by yourself more because you've distanced yourself from everybody else. So you've enhanced the state of separation, which enhances the feeling of something being wrong with me, which makes the hole even bigger, which drives the ego, which makes me want to judge you more, trying to make me feel better, which makes me more separate and apart from. It's a tremendous squirrel cage. And the reason it doesn't work, I've spent my whole life doing this. And what I've discovered is that my ego and my real sense of self-worth are diametrically opposed to each other, as if they were on a teeter-totter or a balance scale. When my self-esteem, my real sense of myself inside is poor, and I don't really feel that good, and my self-esteem is low, my ego rises up to try to compensate. When my self-esteem is really low, that's when I'm the most driven for validation. That's when I need attention. That's when I pick you apart. That's when I'm unforgiving. That's when I'm intolerant. That's when I'm the most judgmental. That's when I need the props. That's when I never have enough money and never have the nice enough car. It's never enough because this up here does not really change this down here. And the reverse is true. As a result of making amends and helping others, there are moments in my sobriety where my self-esteem is really high. And I'll tell you a funny thing. When I'm really good inside, this is very low. When I'm really okay, what you're doing's fine. I don't have to pick it apart. You're okay. I'm okay. You're okay. It's quiet. It's fine. When I'm really okay and my self-esteem is really good, I don't need a new car. I don't have to be the guy, "How you doing, Bob? See my new car?" I don't have to be that guy. I don't need the props. I don't need the validation. I don't need anything, because when you're really okay, you're really okay. right? You're really okay. I don't have to be okay at your expense. I don't have to be okay any, because I'm just really okay. And I've had it backwards all my life. I've fed the beast. All my life I've had it reversed. When I feel bad, I always gravitate towards actions that give me validation and defend my, and pump my ego up. And what it does is when my ego goes up, it automatically pushes my self-esteem down. Because, okay, I'm not the guy that really feels about himself, that feels good about himself. I'm the guy that feels bad about himself, that's dressed up to look like he feels good about himself. And I have that feeling of phoniness and being found out. I feel like a facade human being, which enhances my low self-esteem, which drives my ego. They're diametrically opposed to each other. And I never knew that. I always fed the wrong beast. I always went for gratification. I always went for me. I always went the ego stuff. And it never would have occurred to me when I feel bad that I should go make amends or help somebody else. It is not my first inclination. I got that here. It would have never occurred to me. I would always feed the beast. Always. Natural inclination. Always feed the beast. There's an old American Indian proverb of a young brave who goes to the old wise medicine man and he goes to him and he says, I don't understand what's going on in my life. Sometimes I feel very good about myself and other times I don't feel very good. Sometimes I seem to be full of apprehension and fear and other times I just seem to feel comfortable and go with the flow. Sometimes I seem to be real wrapped up in myself and I don't fit in the tribe, and other times I really feel a part of the tribe. And what is it? What's this? Why is it like this? As if there's two parts to me. And the wise man said, son, your life is like two dogs, a black dog and a white dog, a dog that represents love and one that represents self and fear, that are stuck in that are trapped in a sack. Locked in there in mortal combat to the death. And the young brave says, oh my God, well, which one wins? And the old man said, the one that wins is the one you feed. It's the one you feed. And if I feed this, this one is diminished. If I feed, and Alcoholics Anonymous is, especially with good sponsorship in the steps, will encourage you to feed the good dog, to feed yourself, to take actions that would never occur to you, that really change the way you feel about yourself. It's like when if you're like me, you go to your sponsor, how are you doing? I don't really feel too good. I don't feel very comfortable. I think I'm going to buy a new car. Bob, why don't you go over here down to detox and pick up a couple guys and give them a ride to a meeting? Well, I don't know. I think I'd feel a lot better with a new car. Well, why don't you do that? Just go over here and do that. And what happens is I go over and do that, and I get these new guys in my car, and I start sharing myself, and I feel useful, and I'm letting them off back at the detox, and they're saying to me, thank you. You really helped me. And I'm driving home that night. I don't need a new car. I'm telling you. I don't need nothing. But I go buy the new car. 3 weeks later, all I got's the goddamn payments. Right? Right? The shine's already worn off of the deal. It's like, it's because I fed the beast and now I feel even worse. Now I'm a guy who doesn't like himself very much with a new car. Right? That's what I've become. We had to quit playing God. It didn't work. I cannot wrest happiness and satisfaction out of this world by managing well. It's a delusion. It's a delusion. Next, we decided that hereafter, in this drama of life, God was going to be our director. He is the principal, and we are his agents. He is the father, and we are his children. Most good ideas are simple, and this concept was the keystone of the new and triumphant arch through which we passed to freedom. Some great analogies there. God was going to be my director. He is the principal. I am his agent. He is the father, I am his child. I think I always had it backwards. I wanted him to be my agent. I wanted to petition God for help and give him a list of what kind of help I needed. And come on, let's get with it here. I want him to be my God. Kind of like, it's sort of like the ultimate butler. Right? The ultimate butler, gopher, it's executive secretary God. Right? I want to petition him, because so I'll be better. And what Alcoholics Anonymous is talked about is to stop that. Stop trying to have him be your God. And Bob, why don't you be his man? Why don't you let him be the principal? You be the agent. He's the director. You're the guy who shows up and say, how can I help? He is the father. You are the child. It's a whole different position. It's the position of someone who's surrendered. It is the position of someone who gets it that they will fail managing their own life. That I cannot wrest happiness and satisfaction out of this world by managing well. I had to quit playing God simply because of the great reality is that it does not work. If it worked, I would be up here trying to do a seminar on how you can better play God if it worked. Or if managing your own life in sobriety worked and you could wrest happiness and satisfaction out of managing well, there would be seminars in Alcoholics Anonymous of how you can be better managed. The problem is you're not trying hard enough. AA doesn't say that. AA says stop it. AA doesn't. The big difference between Alcoholics Anonymous and a lot of therapy and self-help. Self-help wants to teach you how to better manage your own life, how to better control your own life. AA says, step away from your life, please. Step away from your life. You've done enough of that. Thank you. Don't do that. It hurts too much. Leave your life alone. Go over here. Work these steps, make these amends, try to trust God, let him have your life, leave your life alone. Go over here, help his kids, and let's see what happens. Let's see what happens. And the end result is everything I ever tried to wrest, all the happiness and satisfaction I tried to wrest out of life through managing well, seems to come to us. If I will just remove myself from the driver's seat. If I will just go over here, clear up the wreckage of my past, help God's kids, and let the happiness and satisfaction come to me. It flows in the river, and I'm the guy that it's flow. Happiness and satisfaction is flowing right by me because I'm frantically trying to swim upstream because I'm sure it's up here, and I miss it. It's just going by. Going by. In my efforts to run the show. When we sincerely, top of 63, when we sincerely took such a position, and that's the position of step 3, all sorts of remarkable things followed. And these are the third step promises. Tremendous promises. Every action step in Alcoholics Anonymous is presented in 3 parts. It's presented in what you could think of is the predisposition to taking the action. And that's what we just talked about. If you get it that you're the failure at running your own life, if you get it that you cannot wrest happiness and satisfaction out of this world by managing well, if you can get it inside you that selfishness, self-centeredness is the root of your trouble, if you can get it how you invariably cause yourself harm by making decisions based on self and people retaliate, if you can get everything that we talked about, then there's some action that's required, and the action is to take this position of turning your will and your life over to the care of God. That's the action. And if you take this action, if you take this position, here's what happens. And there, it says they're remarkable things. They are. We had a new employer being all-powerful. He provided what we needed if we kept close to him and performed his work well. That is a tremendous promise for a self-obsessed self and worried about himself continually. That if I can just do two things, all of my needs will be provided for. If I need not to be alone, I don't have to worry about it. I don't have to try to make myself not alone. It'll be taken care of. If I need whatever I need, will be taken care of. If I can do two things, if I can stay close to him and perform his work well, and I think that just matters that it is my job to try to put some energy into a contact with God. That every day is the day where I will turn my consciousness towards him. Now, some days I turn my consciousness towards him. I will get up in the morning and I will get down on my knees and I will pray. And I'm praying to the air. And other days I get down on my knees and I feel connected. And it doesn't make any difference. The thing that's important is that I make the effort to continually focus myself in that direction, whether I feel it or not. Because I think that the reality of the Spirit is that the Spirit has movements, just like the seasons of the year. And there are times when I'll be taking the action and there's nothing wrong with my program. And I'll feel like it's winter time. I'll feel everything shut down and desolate and barren. And my conscious contact is really not very conscious, except that I keep turning my consciousness towards him. I'm taking the action, but I don't feel connected. And then there are other times when I feel so connected, I want to get a tent and a tambourine. You know what I mean? I feel plugged in, hooked up. And I'll tell you, it doesn't matter. I think the worst times are when I feel like I need the tent and the tambourine. That's the most dangerous time for me. And the important thing is whether I feel plugged in or I don't feel plugged in. I do two things every day. I try to stay close to him. I just keep taking the action of turning my consciousness towards him, whether I feel connected or not. And I perform his work well. And it doesn't take a rocket scientist to finally get it after reading this book and being around here for a while, that really comes down to one thing and one thing only. It's helping his kids. I have been divinely crafted to be of service to people who are exactly like me and suffer from alcoholism like me. Not that I can't be helpful in a church. I can be helpful in a church. But I am not as divinely crafted to be of service there as I am with a bunch of drunks who are dying from alcoholism like I was dying from alcoholism. When in that light, my whole life makes sense. Why I've been through all that, why I felt like that, why I struggled with that stuff. Why it all makes sense in that light. There's a usefulness that comes out of that. And there's a rightness to that that must be surely God's will for me. And if you read this book over and over again, it talks, every time it's a problem, no matter what's going on, it says stuff like, and then we turned our attention to who we could help. It's always about how other-centeredness. It's always in God's will for me. Any vision of God's will that involves making me better and involve, it's all about me, is not a vision of God's will. It's another self-delusion. Because it's another self-centered deal. God's will for me is to clean house so I can be more effective and help his kids. And the great promise is if you do that, Bob, you'll never need for anything again the rest of your life. In the process of doing that, we will fill your holes. Your holes will become filled. And I'll tell you something that I will talk about this in step 12. Those of us that are lucky enough to stay in AA and make the amends and then go sponsoring people and throw ourselves into 12-step work, discover the juice. Discover that sense that comes from helping others, that there's a magic that comes when I'm with a guy, I've listened to a 5th step, or I've spent the whole evening with a guy that's dying of alcoholism and he can't imagine living without it, and I'm sharing my experience with him. And all of a sudden, everything I've went through has become useful to him. and I will come out of that. And I will come out of that in love with him, wanting him to find everything I found here. And at moments like that, I feel inside me truly the way I always imagined I would feel if I had enough love and material stuff. I have finally, in moments like that, am happy and satisfied because I am fulfilling my primary purpose. I am at right with myself and right with God's universe. And it is not as a result of resting nothing from nothing. It's as a result of performing his work. A result of doing what I made a decision to do in step three, in the third step prayer, and we're going to talk about that shortly. First promise, great promise. Second promise, established on such a footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves, our little plans and designs. That's a tremendous promise. For a person that is labored under the bondage of self-concern, that I will be less and less interested in myself. Seems hard to believe, really. And I'll tell you what my experience has been. It's not that I've become unself-centered or lost my inclination for self-involvement. I have not. But what has really and truly happened to me over the years, as I've enmeshed myself in this process of helping others in step 12, my life has evolved into the type of life that is full of other people that I care about. And so I'll tell you what most of my days are like. I set the alarm in the morning to go off in the morning. It's rare that the alarm ever wakes me up. It's very rare. Usually it's the phone. And a half hour to an hour before I want to get up, the phone rings and it's one of the guys I sponsor. And maybe he just got to work and things are, or he's going crazy and he's afraid of this and he's resentful and all this stuff. And what happens is that I will come into consciousness concerned with him. And then throughout the whole day, the phone will ring. I will show up at my meetings. I will see the guys I care about. And a guy who's has the natural inclination towards self-involvement finds myself often spending a lot of my life in other-centeredness. And that's when I'm free. That's when I'm free. And when I'm out of myself and thinking about and caring about you, it feels the way it felt in the early days of my drinking. Because what I think, what one of the great things that alcohol did is alcohol relieved me of the bondage of self. I remember the early days of my drinking, walking into a party or with a bunch of guys and just, I felt awful. Locked up, alone, inside of me. I got my emotions and my life right on me. And I don't fit, and I can't talk to anybody, and I'm depressed, and I'm full of anxiety, and I don't like nothing. Five shots of whiskey would get me off of me, and I could come out and play. It would relieve me of the bondage of self. And I could be one of you, and I could care about you. I could listen to you. It freed me. Freed me. And so does Alcoholics Anonymous. It frees me. From the only thing I've ever need to be free from. It's not the IRS. It's me. I'm the guy that I got to get away from. I'm the guy that gets on me until I feel trapped. I'm the guy that makes me feel like I'm locked up. And that's what I got to get free of. More and more, we became interested in seeing what we could contribute to life. After a while, it's just you do service just for the joy of doing it. Because you get it. Takes a while. Takes a lot of years here to finally connect the dots. But when you connect the dots, That's where the good dope is. That's where the good whiskey is. It's not, we don't, those of us that spend a lot of time in 12-step calls, it's really easy to be new and think, oh, they're so altruistic. No, that's where the good dope is. That's why we do it, because that's what gets me free of me, relieves me of the bondage of self, gets me plugged in, gets me feeling like this is good stuff here. I can't get that sitting at home in my living room. No matter how abundant it is, I can't get that freedom there. I can only get it. You are the vehicle. You're the vehicle. I can't get it by myself. Never could. Never could. Because that, no matter what I bring into my life as a taker trying to fill up the void, no matter what I bring in there, it's not enough. It's never enough. The shine wears off of it. Bring this in. No, that's not enough. More, 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 more. It's never enough. When I turn it around, it's all the difference in the world. As we felt new power flow in. And that's what we're tapping into. We're tapping into the juice, the power. Just as I tapped into it in early drinking, in my early days of drinking, when alcohol was the magic source of power. When a guy who couldn't fit with people, who couldn't socialize, who was kind of awkward verbally with people, and I'd get 7 or 8 shots in me, and my vocabulary flowed. I could talk to people. I was connected. I was funny. I was intuitive. I was in the zone. And that's when I'm relieved of the bondage of self and sobriety. New power flows through me. I become an instrument, a vehicle, as it talks about, a channel, as it talks about in the prayer of St. Francis. A channel. As we felt new power flow in, as we enjoyed peace of mind. You know what peace of mind comes from? Not running the universe. Really. You know what? Anxiety is the byproduct of trying to run the universe. When you run it, when you're the center, and it all revolves around you, and it's all your responsibility, it's all your job to rest, happiness, and satisfaction out of this world, it's up to you. Man, there's a lot of crap to worry about, I'm telling you. There's a whole world out there, people that are doing stuff, you got to watch them. And they think stuff, you got to watch them real careful, because you don't know when they're going to turn, you don't know what they're thinking, they might turn on you any minute now. You got to watch them. It's overwhelming. That's why new people, I heard a guy say this not too long ago. I knew exactly what he meant. I said, well, how's your life now that you're sober? He looked at me and he said, it's too big. I said, yeah, I know. It is too big, isn't it? Too big to handle, isn't it? Yeah, it's too big. It's overwhelming. Or you see some guy that's sober about 2 years, hasn't surrendered yet. And, you know, he's got that look, that tired. You know, is it tired? Running the universe and protecting and defending yourself and trying to make things right is a tiring business. That's why guys like that, you say, how you doing? Hanging in there. This guy said to me not too long ago, I said, how's it going? He said, well, I guess it ain't bad if you don't weaken. Want to say, give up, let go. He can't imagine letting go. He can't imagine it. Can't imagine it. Keeps running it for a while and doesn't drink. He will imagine it, I'm telling you. Nervous breakdown in spiritual experience. They're really, you know what I'm saying? Thin line sometimes. I love this promise. As we discovered we could face life successfully. Powerful stuff. I couldn't face life successfully. I was a runner. The good stuff was hard for me because I didn't know how to take praise and compliments. And it was awkward. And the bad stuff, I couldn't take criticism. I'm the guy that if I really screw up on a job, I'm probably going to quit or I'm going to put the blame on somebody else, or I'm going to slough it off or make it look like it wasn't me. I can't be wrong. I can't face this stuff. And I'm very defended, and I have a lot of rationalizations and justifications. I have an inability to, when I screw up, stand up and say, I did that. I screwed up. I was wrong. What can I do to make it right? And that's facing life. Facing life when it's going right is not facing life. You're just on a winning streak. The real test of facing life is when you've really screwed up. Can you be a stand-up guy? Do you trust in God enough to stand up and realize your life's in His hands and you're just here to be of service? You're a servant. And a good servant doesn't defend nothing. A good servant tries to serve. And I screwed up, Master. What can I do to make it right? What you tell me, I'll do it. What can I do to make it right? And there's a tremendous freedom in that, because I'm no longer hostage to my own mistakes and my own bad behavior. If you can stand up and be a stand-up guy, then there's nothing that can happen in my life that threatens me. I can make mistakes. I make mistakes. Yeah, I make a lot of mistakes. It ain't so bad, because if I don't defend them and I don't have to be right, then I can be wrong. And if you're wrong, it's not bad, because then you get to fix it. It's good. It's good. And sometimes it's a beautiful thing to stand up and be wrong and then go make it right. That's a nice thing. It's a wonderful thing. I always thought that I had to be perfect to be anything at all. I don't have to be perfect. I just have to be able to face life successfully. I don't run no more. I was a runner. I could run without leaving the room. You confront me about something, I just go to the Bahamas in my head. You know what I mean? You're just going, I just tune you out. You're like that yakety yak, 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 you know. Can't get to me. I've gone away. Thank you. I'll be back later. I can stand up and listen to you and try to see where you're right, because I don't have to be right. As we became conscious of His presence. Some days I'm real conscious of His presence. Some days I just trust that He's there. I think that's normal. I think that if you're not always feel like you're plugged in, I don't think that necessarily means there's something wrong with your program. It may be that you got a resentment or a fear or something that got you back in the control seat. But if you've really been clean with yourself and your sponsor and you're okay, but you don't feel plugged in, it might just be the season of your soul, the movements. I think it's egotistical and self-centered in the extreme to assume that I'm going to be plugged in, turned on, tuned in 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. I mean, I understand why I would think that way. That's why I drank, because if I could keep the buzz going, then I'd be the guy all the time. But it's not practical. Life's not like that. I don't think the soul's like that. My spirit has never been like that. I'm not plugged in all the time. But I'm close to the extent that I'm trying to help others. I'm close. That's the closest I get. And I try to do that often. We began to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, or the hereafter. That promise in itself would be what would bring me to the table. I don't know about you guys, but I lived in a tremendous state of anxiety and worry. I just worried all the time about stuff. And if I could be free of that, that's not a bad deal for me. I'll sign up for this. Count me in. What do I got to do? If you let you, I can be free of that. What do I got to do? I'll step up to the plate. We were reborn. We were now at step three. Many of us said to our Maker as we understood Him, God, I offer myself to Thee to build with me and do with me as Thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self that I may better do Thy will. Take away my difficulties that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of Thy power thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. We thought well before taking this step, making sure we were ready, that we could at last abandon ourselves utterly to him. I got down on my knees with another member of Alcoholics Anonymous in early sobriety, and I said that third step prayer. And the guy asked me that I was saying it with, if I had thought about this, and I'd read this part of the book many, many times, and I really thought I knew what I was doing. And I got to tell you, I didn't have a clue. I got down on my knees, and I said that prayer, and the next 8, 10 months, probably a good part of a year of my life was insane, was crazy. I had stuff happening to me that just, I was in anxiety and fear all the time. One of the things that happened is I lost my job. And this was not just a job, this was a career. And I could not get a job in that field again. Every single door was closed to me. Every single door. I was working as a substance abuse counselor at a rehab, and I lost that job, and I had a great resume I put together, and I put it out. Every helping agency in Nevada, I even sent some out of state, and I could not get another job in that field. And I'm unemployed. And I'm scared to death. I'm afraid I'm going to lose everything. I'm afraid I'm going to be homeless. My roommate moves out, gets married, moves out. Now, I have an apartment that I can barely afford my half of the rent when I'm employed. Now I have the whole rent and no job. My girlfriend, who I'm dating and kind of enthralled with, dumps me for somebody else, starts going out with some other guys. And at the same time, I started going through these emotional upheavals that were crazy, and they had made no sense. I would just be sitting there having a cup of coffee, watching some cowboy movie or some crazy thing, nothing to do with me, really, just nonsense, and just start sobbing. As if emotions that were coming out of me that were 20 years old, I don't know where they're coming from. I went to my sponsor. I said, this is awful. I am getting worse here. I should have never done that third step. This is really awful. I'm getting worse here. He said, you're right on track. I thought, for what? A train wreck? What are you talking about? It's awful. And you see, when I got down on my knees and I said that prayer out loud in front of another guy, in front of God, I think God took that, what I was saying, more seriously than I did. Because I said to him, point blank, I said, God, I offer myself to you for you to build with me and to do with me as you will. And I was like a burnt out, abandoned building. In order to rehab it, you've got to start tearing crap out. And he started tearing crap out. The problem with him tearing it out is he never gave me the diagram. He never gave me the plan. If he'd have called me up and said, oh, by the way, Bob, this is God. We're going to have to get you out of that job because it's a dead-end job. Most alcoholics that work in the recovery get stuck and stagnant in there. We want to get you out of that job because we want you to have to be forced out of desperation to take another job over here for minimum wage, which will result in you getting a chance to buy into that company, which will result in someday you'll have a $10 million a year business. Bob, would this plan be okay for you? I just said, well, yeah, God, heck yeah, sure, sign me up. He didn't say that. Didn't know. Just starts taking stuff, building with me, doing with me. If he'd have said to me, God, we got to get your roommate out of here. God, Bob, we got to get your roommate to leave, and we got to get him to leave because there's a guy from Florida with a couple years of sobriety that's going to move to Las Vegas pretty soon. He's going to need a place to or somebody to room with, and you and him are going to do a lot of 12-step work together, and he's going to help you to take. He's going to be a catalyst to take your whole program to a new level. Would that be okay with you, Bob? Oh yeah, you put it that way, God, sure, sign me up. Got to get this girl out of your life. Got to get her out of your life. The guy she's going to go with after you, they're both going to drink together. They're both going to drink and never come back to AA. You'll die if you stay with her. Can we get her out of your life? Oh, yeah, get her out, God. Sure, take her away. He didn't tell nothing. He didn't say nothing to me. He just started doing with me and building with me. And it took me a long time later to actually see the hand of God in my life and realize that absolutely everything that was changed or removed had to be changed and removed from my ultimate happiness, my ultimate spiritual growth, and my ultimate welfare. But I couldn't see it at the time. And people in AA just used to keep hammering me with just trust in God, trust in God. And I would say, all right, I trust in God, but he looks a little shaky today. I don't know. I was 10 and a half years probably sober before I understood everything in step three. Early in sobriety, after doing the third step prayer, I started saying the third step on my knees every single morning, and I still do that. I did that this morning. I get down on my knees and I say the third step prayer. Now, I'm 10 and a half years sober, and I've been saying this prayer every single day of my sobriety for nine years, something, I don't know, over 9 years, probably close to 10 years. And I don't know what I'm saying. Now, I don't know how a guy like me who fancies myself as bright and intelligent could say a prayer 360-plus days a year for almost 10 years and not know what he's saying. But I didn't. I didn't have a clue. And here I am. I'm a 10 and a half, I'm between almost 10 and a half, maybe close to 11 years sober, and I'm taking a guy through the steps. And we get to step three. And we're reading this part of the book, and we're talking about it. And we're reading the third step prayer, and we're talking about it. And he says to me, he says, let me see if I got this right. He said, in the third step, what we're going to do is we're saying to God, God, I offer myself to thee to build with me and do with me as thou will. So we're making a decision, essentially, we're making a decision to head my life in the direction of making it none of my business. That's the deal. I'm going to try to make my life none of my business. Because I am saying, for here, God, for you to build with me, do with me, I'm out of the loop, it's your deal. None of my business anymore. He says, is that right? I said, yeah, that's right. Good. He was right on the money. And then he says, you know, but we can't do that, can we? And we're talking about that. Yeah, we can't really make our life none of our business. How do you stop worrying about yourself when that's all you ever do is worry about yourself? How do you stop being self-concerned when that's your basic nature? So I ask God to do something. I ask him to relieve me of the bondage of self, because I am shackled. I am hostage. I am a prisoner of my own self-involvement. I am a hostage. So I'm asking him to relieve me of the bondage of self so that I may better do his will. Because the reality is, if God does not relieve me of some of this bondage of self, how am I going to make my life none of my business? How am I going to become other-centered when I am self-concerned? And then the last part is the part I didn't have a clue on. I didn't get it. I just didn't get it. I don't know why. This new guy taught me what it was. It says, take away my difficulties. I thought I knew what that meant. Take away my difficulties. And I got a list, God. Yeah, I got a list. Take away my difficulties. But it says, take away my difficulties so that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. Trying to make our life none of our business, since we can't do that, we're asking God to relieve us of the bondage of self so we can do that. And if he'll do that, if he'll take away these difficulties with the bondage of self, we're doing all of that just so we could help other people. And he said that, and I thought, oh my God, that's it. It's not about me. So that to take away these difficulties with the only thing I really have difficulty with, the bondage of self. If he will take away my difficulties with the bondage of self, for one reason and one reason only, so that victory over them would bear witness to those I would help of his power, thy power, his love, and his way of life. Because later it tells us that we will have entered the world of the Spirit. We will be on a different plane. And I finally got it at 10 and a half years sober, almost 11 years sober, that Alcoholics Anonymous is not, even though people try to make it, was not and never will be a self-help program. It is not a self-help program. It is a program of self-abandonment and service. The great reality of my life is I cannot fix me. And I must give up trying. So I give up. I leave my life alone. I pray that God will relieve me of the bondage of self. I take the inventory, the things inside me, the judgments, the resentments, where I've been wrong about my parents, all the things that keep me on the defensive and trying to be right, the fears that keep me locked up inside myself with a death grip on my life that I can't let go of because I got to control it, the relationships that make me feel bad about myself, the things I've done to gratify myself at other people's expense that I walk away from and my spirit has been diminished, that I clear away the things that keep me locked up inside of me for one reason only, so I can be useful. Because in the usefulness, in the service, in helping God's kids, do I get the juice? Why don't we break for lunch? Why don't we say the Lord's Prayer?